Welcome to Mark Hummel's Blues Harmonica Party. I'm in the UK right now, playing in London, and I'm interviewing my friend Big Joe Lewis, who was I met way back in 1993, I think, or 92, wow. Something like that. Yeah, when I went over to Brussels and played Belgium, that yeah. Brussels Blues Festival, yeah. So we're going to talk about Joe's career in the blues in the UK and a lot of the different people you got to work with and mm-hmm. your thoughts and feelings about the blues and how I guess where your vision is of blues. I mean, you're kind of mm-hmm. like me, it seems like, in the sense of you like the older styles.
Yeah, I listen to I guess the older styles, but you know, music moves on. And I always say to people that if I was a jazz fan in the 20s,
right,
you know, I wouldn't recognize Miles Davis or Keith Jarrett.
Right.
You know, to me, that wouldn't be jazz. But, you know, music just moves on. And
yeah.
You find what you like and then yeah. you adapt to it.
Yeah.
And I just do what I do.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any much connection with what people do now.
Yeah.
You know? And that's fine. That's fine. You know, I'm happy to do my thing.
Right. Well, just tell me how you got into the blues and what your early experiences were with it.
Well, you know, when I came to Europe, you know, as a child, I was from Jamaica.
Oh, really?
Born and raised there. So, you know, we grew up listening to a whole different type of music. You know?
Right.
Obviously reggae music and soul. We used to have Jackson 5 cartoons and you know, that kind of stuff was big. You know, we didn't have Rolling Stones and all that sort of thing. So I came here and that was what people were into. Like, it was the hard rock, the Led Zeppelins and all that kind of stuff. And man, I
just wasn't your thing.
And I couldn't find, you know, music easily from back home. It was a bit more difficult. And so I was searching around. I'd go to gigs and see people. And you know, one night I'd go and see Sylvester, you know, who's a disco artist. The next night might be The Clash. And it was kind of like, yeah, okay. And then I don't know why my mother got me a double album by Skip James.
Really?
Yeah. It was Van Gogh.
Were you a teenager at this point?
Yeah. I was 16.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is deep. And then I got a compilation album called All the Blues All the Time, and it had Howlin' Wolf Summer, House Rock and Blues.
Right.
Good evening, everybody. This is the Wolf coming to you.
Yeah.
Right. And that was it. I was just, oh wow.
It's interesting the way, I mean, you know, your story, I think all of our stories are so similar in the sense of that, you know, as teenagers, we'd hear this and and it would be just something that would, like, jump out and grab us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, everyone I've ever talked to, that's kind of the deal, you know.
Yeah, it was. The the other thing was that when I got to be about my early 20s, I became a crazy record collector.
Right.
So I was buying 78s, mostly 78s, but 45s too. And I fell in with a bunch of older record collectors. Uh-huh. I mean, like, I was 20, they were like 35, and they'd done everything, and they'd seen, you know, Muddy come over, and James Cotton in 62 or whatever, and they'd been all around, and they knew so much, and they would, you know, here was I wanting to buy Walter Davis records or Babyface or Leroy.
20.
Yeah, and they were like, oh, yeah. Okay, do you know John Brim?
Right.
Oh, no, okay. Oh, right. Oh,
they're and turning you on.
Yeah, and in those days, you know, before the internet and before everything was available on CD, four CDs. If I wanted to hear Country Jim or, I don't know, Jesse Thomas, that was how you would hear them. And you had to buy the records. And so I never heard it through other, you know, a lot of people came to it because they might have heard Paul Butterfield or whatever.
Right.
And I never really heard it through that kind of thing.
Others,
I never kind of understood why would I listen to this person do a copy of Otis Rush?
Right. That was my attitude.
Because it's Otis Rush.
And right. Think, well, right. Yeah. Why would I listen to Eric? Why would I copy Eric Clapton's Hideaway when I can copy Freddie King's?
Amen.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was always more interested. You know, to me, whether somebody was really well known or not didn't make a difference to me.
Right.
So to me, Charlie Booker or, you know, those early Lowell Fullerson records, just right. Him and Martin.
Right. Oh, that's so awesome stuff.
That was, to me, was just as good as The Throw Has Gone.
Right.
You know, it moved me as much. And
yeah.
So
yeah.
I just started digging, buying all these records and listening and learning. Yeah. And that's what happened.
Yeah. And so were you playing guitar at this point? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, I started off as a saxophone player.
Oh, okay.
Gave that up very, very quickly because you can't do both. You can't sing and play
right.
saxophone.
Right.
So I started playing guitar. I had a partner, King David. We played two guitars, and one would play the bass and the other would play the top part.
Right.
And we did that, and we didn't know any other musicians. You know, we didn't know harmonica players or drummers. Or,
right.
You know, all the drummers were like rock players. And,
now, were you in London at this point?
No, I was in Kent, a little place on the coast.
Right.
And so for years, you know, we were just playing duos, and then I moved to London, put a band together, and that's where it took off. Got double bass. You know, I'd never seen
right.
a double bass player before.
Right.
And yeah, met some really good harmonica players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was this the 80s?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
And what was it? What was it called? What was the name of the band? Big Joe Lewis.
And his Blues Kings.
And his Blues Kings.
Yeah.
So it's always
yeah.
been that.
Name. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when did you hook up with Lil George? Late 80s?
Yeah, about 88,
okay.
I believe, yeah. I was playing with a harp player and he left. And we used to play a jam session for harp players. We'd be the backing band. And
really?
Wow. And George came along and he'd not been playing too long, but, you know, there was something about him.
Yeah.
And we just heard him. And he sang as well, which was
right.
rare for all of us.
Right.
I don't need to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when my other harp player left, I asked George if he'd come and play. And, you know, he was just, he just got better and better and better.
Well, it was really cool to have, it's so cool to have a band where you got two vocalists because it
yeah.
really expands, you know.
And quite different.
Yeah.
Different
and you guys are such different singers. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
great.
Guys blew me away then when I saw you in 93, man. It was like, I went, damn.
Good times.
Yeah, these kids really can do it.
Yeah, good times. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about some of the old timers that you were able to play with, and what did you get out of, you know, playing with the old timers over here?
Well, the first guy, I guess, I remember doing a show with Memphis Slim in the early 80s, and just remembering how he was like a, I mean, he was a giant, like physically.
Mm-hmm.
He was a really big guy, and he had
yeah.
these fingers that were like, but they curved at the ends like bananas,
right,
that. And he—it was just him and a drummer, a French guy called Phil Combell.
Right,
and they carried the show, and they were just so exciting, and it was just like effortless but wonderful. And then I started hanging out with Eddie C. Campbell, who's he was from Chicago. He spent
right.
some time in the 80s living in London. I think he had to leave Chicago in a hurry. And
that's what I heard.
We went to see him play, this King David and I, and we were talking to him afterwards, and he was like, yeah, come around to my place where I'm staying, we'll talk. So we turned up with our guitars and he would tell us a story. Say, did you know Magic Sam? And he was like, oh man, you know, because I knew Magic, but all these stories and you know, the people that he used to play with, and he would show us how to play Hideaway and play little things, and somewhere there's a tape of us sort of just like,
right.
oh, is that how you do it?
Right.
And he was really cool. But then I got into, when I put a band together, we'd be asked to back people. So I think the first guy I backed was Kerry Bell in the 80s. And then we did some stuff, I mean, lots and lots of people like Lazy Lester and John Primer, and did some stuff with Honey Boy, Big Jack Johnson.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Homesick.
Yeah,
you know, Big Lucky Carter, Reverend Charlie Jackson.
Yeah.
Mud Morganfield later on.
Oh, okay.
Mason, and
yeah.
Just a whole bunch. Benny Smith from St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Clara McDaniel, she was really good too. But people would, I knew a lot of promoters in the States who worked with these artists.
Mm-hmm.
And they called
me. So would they'd contact you and
yeah.
help put together
yeah.
tours?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Or festival dates. So
right.
we're coming to this festival, we bag us Booba Bones and
oh,
Big
wow.
Band Smitty.
Yeah.
Those
yeah,
were
yeah. oh that was a great combination, man.
Yeah, well,
I saw Benny Carter Benny
Smith?
Turner.
Oh, Benny Wasn't Turner.
Benny Turner. I saw Benny Turner with Big Bad Smitty.
Yeah, he was the bass player.
Yeah.
Right? Benny.
He used to play that one. No. Benny, I think was it Benny Turner, the guy that from St. Louis? Was that
Benny Smith.
Okay,
Benny Smith was a guitar player who
right.
taught Ike.
Taught Ike, right.
Exactly. Yeah, Benny Smith, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of. And they had Arthur Williams, Vaughn Hart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Orca.
Really great show.
Yeah. So a lot of those guys, you know, when they used to come over, they needed people who kind of understood their music a bit.
So did you set up tours for those guys too?
No, we usually work with agents, but we could connect them with people. And
right.
Yeah. Yeah. When those people were still here. But.
Right. So what was your takeaway of just how... Well, there's your phone light going off. I don't know what that is. Yeah. But what was your takeaway of working with those guys? You know, as far as like, I mean, the difference between, you know, the older black guys from America working with the younger UK guys.
I don't know. I think it was just like a...
Was it a whole new world to you to be around these guys?
You know, it wasn't like I'd been listening to the Rolling Stones, and then all of a sudden there's this new...
We knew their music, the genre. Yeah.
But, you know, when you're playing with someone, you're absorbing the music on stage rather than just
right.
listening to records. That's completely different.
Yeah.
And I can remember being quite surprised at some of the choices the artists would sing.
Yeah.
And so I remember doing a show with Big Jack Johnson, and he called Steeloy. I go, Steeloy. You know, it's getting late. Why can't we? I didn't know that song.
Well, that's kind of it's sort of the Chilton circuit.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing we didn't have.
Yeah.
And John Prime used to like to do Rhinestone Cowboy.
Right.
And of course, Lester used to love to play country music.
Exactly.
And so he'd say, Lonesome Fugitive, Merle Haggard. And I go, oh, I don't know. I have no idea. So it was good to kind of stretch you.
Right.
And expose you to.
Right.
Experiences you can't just learn off an old record.
Yeah, well, I always thought that there was this funny thing between the English musicians or European musicians in general, and then the blues guys coming over was almost a culture clash.
Yeah,
you know. But the thing was, if you wanted to learn from it, you kind of absorbed what it was that they, like you say. I mean, in a way, that was an education, just being able to play with these guys. I mean, that was my feeling too.
And spending 2 weeks on the road with
right.
with Lazy Lester or something.
Oh, yeah. you got a whole lot of Lester.
Exactly. You know, that stuff is just priceless time.
It is priceless because they're all gone.
Yeah.
Everybody we're talking about except for Primer, I think, is
departed. I saw John a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
He was on great form.
Yeah, he still sounds great.
Yeah.
I agree. So now you played also in a band that was very popular in the UK, the Big Town Playboys.
Yes, I did.
And you joined when Mike Sanchez left.
Yeah.
And you were there a couple of years?
2 years.
Two years.
We made one record.
Right.
And it was a nice change of pace for me because, you know, working in a band with saxophones. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of not what I'm used to hearing.
No, but I always loved people like Jimmy McCracklin and that kind of thing. And, you know, tougher, you know, Mike was more a West Coast, slightly smoother, you know, I couldn't ever carry a child.
He was almost like Amos Milburn.
Yeah, Amos Milburn,
yeah.
Little Willie, Little Phil, those kind of guys.
Right.
But just working, you know, they were a really good band, and working yeah. with horns, it was good fun. We did some good travels.
Yeah.
You know, quite a lot of traveling.
Now, was Andy Sylvester still in
no,
here?
No, Andy had left. Andy had left okay. a few years earlier, which was a shame. You know, we had a he great guitar great. Player, but,
yeah.
you know, great. I used to see the Big Town Playboys, and yeah. you just watch Andy, and
yeah.
he would, like, take one solo in a night.
Yeah.
And it was just so great.
It was great, yeah.
You know, very yeah. understated and yeah. underrated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing too, for me about blues is that the kind of blues I think probably both of us really like is not a flashy, it's not a super flashy thing.
It's not sports guitar.
No, it's not. It's not technically always adept, but there's a feel to it and there's a sense of phrasing.
Yeah, it's the feeling that, you know, moves me. And so, you know, I'd rather hear, I can't remember who said it, but it's something like, you know, like one verse of Lightning Hopkins
right.
is worth more to me than the Beatles. Everything they ever did.
Right.
I just,
right.
I can hear that. You can just like,
yeah.
wow, you know, war news.
Yeah, yeah.
You may turn your radio on, hear the news every day, and then a song about Korea, and you just go, wow, it's,
yeah.
sends chills down.
You yeah, know, it's heavy stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you've started doing a lot more solo stuff.
Yeah, I always liked doing it. And then...
was that because of the pandemic?
No, I was doing it before that.
But, yeah.
You know, I'm a full-time musician, and it was a easy way to make a living, you know, so you can go and play at a bar, mm-hmm. turn up with an amp or house amp or whatever it is.
Right.
And I liked it. It was freeing. Just being able to play exactly what you want, speeding up, slowing down, not having to
right. worry about somebody else.
Worry about somebody else, yeah. Yeah, I really like it. I love yeah. playing with my trio because they're yeah. just like...
Yeah. And you guys have all been playing together a lot. For
yeah,
a long time.
Peter, my drummer, who's playing this tonight, right. I think it's about 19 years.
Wow. You know, how about Lewis?
Lewis, I think he's the new guy. He's, I think, 6'7".
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's... Yeah. Still earning his
well, thanks for coming on to Lewis Fielding.
Lewis Fielding is a
great yeah. guitar player.
Yeah. yeah, and he was with George before that.
Right,
that's where he learned a lot
exactly.
of great stuff.
Yeah,
George. Yeah,
yeah. So, how did you make it through the pandemic?
I sat and looked out in my garden, played a lot of records. I cooked. I was grateful that I had a home.
Yeah.
I didn't spend as much.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
It was fine. I was just lucky. I had COVID really bad at the beginning.
Did you really?
And March 2020, it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
But I made it through, and it was a nice summer. I looked at my, like I say, I looked at what I had, and I was very blessed.
Yeah.
And I knew work would come back. And, you know, being a solo guitar player, singer.
You're kind of the first guy getting hired back.
There you go. You know.
Right.
When you can't have three people on stage, you can always have one person on
right.
stage. And so that worked pretty well for me.
That's yeah. good. Well, it sounds like you're working a whole lot, especially the fact you said the blues kitchens have been really a
yes.
staple
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and other places, but the blues kitchens have been... really good for not just for me but for other musicians.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Do you still travel much in Europe?
Yeah, not as much as I did.
Yeah.
Which is actually okay. But you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to Germany and Austria and maybe Switzerland in a couple of months. And,
mm-hmm.
A few trips here and there. I usually go to Denmark and Sweden right. every so often, and but. Sometimes it's nice, you know, I've done a lot of traveling. Sometimes it's nice to sleep in your own bed.
Yes, it is. I can vouch for that.
Yeah, I'm sure.